I'm going to give the message in two parts today. So we're going to have the first section now. And I've entitled this, The Shadows. The first part I'd like to focus on the beginning of Psalm 23, verse 4. And that's the part where it says, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death." And then later on, I want to do the second part of verse 4, which is, "Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." I always like to explore the original context of Scripture. I like to gain an understanding of why it was said or why it was written. And it's the same when we talk to people, isn't it? I don't know about you, but I like to, when you're talking to someone, it's good to get the background about why they're saying what they want to say, especially if it's something important to them. You understand the context of why they're saying it. Sometimes it's good to be able to do that if you're having an argument with your beloved or something like that, to take a step back and instead of biting back, you just try and understand the context in which they are saying what they're saying, and that helps you to sort of communicate a bit better. I wanted to find out about Psalm 23 and at what stage in his life did David actually write this psalm. What I discovered in my readings was that there are so many theologians who have differing opinions about who wrote what in the book of Psalms itself. So I couldn't get a definite answer about when David wrote the psalm. He did write it, but I couldn't get a definite answer about at what stage he wrote this in his life. Some suggested he was a boy when he wrote it. But then myself, and I'm certainly no theologian, I kind of thought, wow, there's a bit of depth to Psalm 23. Maybe sometimes kids can pick up that kind of concept. But there's a bit of depth there, experience, which makes me think that he wrote it later as a man. And then others have suggested that he wrote it after his son had died in battle. Well, I wasn't able to make a connection between his circumstances at the time and the beautiful poetry of Psalm 23, but what I did come to understand was that the book of Psalms, as we know them, are a collection of poems by multiple authors. Individual psalms were written as far back in history as Moses' time, right through to the time of David and Solomon. Many of the psalms were directly linked to historical accounts in the Old Testament, so the author and the context they were written in were easily identified, but then there was others that are not. So it's a collection of poetry from different people. The knowledge and my understanding that warriors of the faith over an expansive period of time penned personal poetry about the faithfulness, sovereignty and love of God was more than enough for me to set the context of my simple message today. The reality that we are continuing to read and sing and find comfort in these beautiful ancient scriptures in 2019 is absolutely remarkable to me. The book of Psalms was like an ancient hymnal of God's people. The poetry was often set to music, and it is a book that expresses worship, and when we read it, it invites us to enter into the very emotion of the poet themselves, their feelings and their thoughts about God. It has been helpful to many of us, hasn't it? Many times when we've just opened the book of Psalms and somehow it's just been able to express how we've been feeling. And I hope as we look at Psalm 23 today, that we'll do that again for you this morning. Our particular focus, firstly, this morning is a verse that has carried millions of people through one of the most feared things for humans, and that is the death experience. I have seen many non-believers who have clung tightly to Psalm 23 when their greatest fear of imminent death has been realised, either for themselves or for their loved ones. And I have also witnessed believers who have relished its beautiful promises when they have been faced with death. And I did that the other day with Olive. I saw that in her, just such a sense of peace and comfort. To the believer, the idea of verse 4 in Psalm 23 is about walking through the valley of the shadow of death, fearing no evil. It indicates, as the poet expresses, a steady advance, the walk, a walk along a road that knows its physical end, but at the same time feel safe and calm. A believer doesn't run as though they were terrified and confronted with death, or do they stand frozen in fear when confronted with death? But they just keep to a steady pace. And that's what I think I saw in Olive too when we were talking about things. Just that steady pace as she reflects upon her life. There's been a steady pace of God as her shepherd, and she does not fear the future. You and I have had the privilege of witnessing this in the lives of believers, people we have loved, and even today in this very place, and not just Olive, there are other people who are confronted with the reality that death may be imminent. They're struggling with sicknesses and things that they know are life-threatening. While we acknowledge the psalmist's reference to the usual meaning of verse 4 being a physical death, I want us to focus on a different kind of valley of the shadows this morning. Sadly, I believe people are living under other shadows of death, slowly killing them on the inside. Other shadows over their lives that are slowly chipping away and eating at them on the inside. I remember walking with my grandkids when they first discovered their shadows. Have you ever done that? Do you remember that with your kids? It was quite fascinating, really. And I remember explaining, I don't know which one, it was a couple of them, it must have been Paula and Garth's children, and talked about, I scared them at first and said, there's a shadow following you, you know, that kind of thing. And they're looking at it and turning around, and just that fear when they first recognise that there's a shadow following them. I can remember as they sort of understood it, and then they'd start to try and play tricks on it that it'd go away, and, you know, they thought that they could dodge it, but they never ever could. It's similar to a whole lot of people. People are living with a shadow, but this shadow is a shadow of sin, a shadow of sorrow, a shadow of grief, shame, brokenness and pain, and loneliness accompanies them all the time like a shadow does. My experience throughout many years of ministry and communication with the general public as I go about my everyday life is that I have noticed it doesn't take too long for people to share some trauma that they have either that has either affected them directly or affected those that they love. I only need to smile, and I do this quite often, smile at someone, whether I'm doing the grocery shopping or having a cup of coffee, or I've been known to just go up and say to a lady, you're sitting by yourself, do you mind if I have sit down and have a cup of coffee with you? They always say yes. Do you know that? If you ever want to try it, they always say yes, because there's lonely people out there. And it never, ever takes long for them, if they're in pain, for that pain to surface quickly. That shadow of death, that shadow of grief, that shadow of agony, of sorrow, sits very, very close to the surface. You know the conversations that I'm talking about. You have conversations with people where you come away from them and you say, oh my goodness, I don't think I'll ever complain about anything again. You know when you think that your life's been pretty rough and you have those conversations and you go, oh my. But we do complain again. I wish we get that act together, but we don't sometimes. Or the conversations where we come away and say, Lord, gee, I have so much to be thankful for. How can I help to lighten that person's load? We are privy to so much more with social media these days, and we see and hear about trauma in people's lives every single day. We seem to be barraged with it, don't we? On the news and just things, just terrible plights. And I often wonder what we do with all that visual content that we see. I think society, because of the saturation of this, we tend to categorise trauma. We kind of rate it and we put both the people and the trauma they've experienced into boxes. After we've heard such stories of pain, we're never too sure what to do with what we've heard. I don't know if you're a bit like that. It's a bit like that. I remember, you know, years and years ago, you used to just see the orphans or the starving on the television, with their bloated tummies, and our hearts would be moved. But there seems to be a saturation of that, and we're confronted with it all the time. Whatever category we put people and their pain into, often defines the way we will respond to them. Like I said, the global pain and suffering we respond to sometimes with our money and the giving of our material things, and that we find solace in being able to help people in pain like that. Closer to home, sometimes we categorise the people's trauma as being far too great to even offer any support. We sometimes think, no, that should just be left with the professional, and sometimes it should be. I'm not saying it shouldn't. I'm not saying that we all come on board and start to kind of think we're going to counsel everybody that's going through trauma and pain. But there's so many people in deep pain, and we have a part to play. This is what I'm getting to with it. On a personal level, which is often harder, we may know people who have been grieving for many years, and in our limited understanding, our manner can be dismissive and insensitive, as we make the assumption that they should be pretty much over it by now. We've categorised their pain. Oh, gee, you know, if I had gone through that, I probably would have been over that by now. Gee, they're languishing in grief. Gee, they're languishing in pain. And we tend to categorise and put people in boxes. We are complex people. And that might be the way we just cope with tragedy, with trauma. I'm no psychologist, but I do know that's how people respond to the pain of others. Psalm 23 is a beautiful psalm that speaks to people in pain. That's why the word picture of the Good Shepherd is so comforting. Trauma is defined as, in the dictionary, a deeply distressing or disturbing experience. The word trauma originates from the late 17th century and is a Greek word which literally means wound. And traumatic events are incidences that cause physical, emotional, spiritual, or psychological harm to people. I'm not going to refer to the word trauma anymore, but rather this morning, in my last comments here, I just want to refer to it as pain and living in the shadows, living in the valley of the shadows of death, not physical death, but another death that resides within people's hearts. You've heard it said, and probably have said it yourself, oh, that wounds are a part and parcel of life. And that's true. And that term is often said at the conclusion of a conversation with someone who's just told you a very harrowing experience. We don't really know what to say, and we've all said it, but we tend to go, oh, wounds are a part of life, aren't they? And that's where we finish that conversation. When the wound becomes a continual shadow that follows someone throughout their days, sometimes on the periphery of their vision, but sometimes that hang over them in darkness and depression, we have to be very sensitive and very careful in loving and caring for those people. There's a more coarse and colloquial terminology that people have said, and it probably just goes like this. And it's probably something you've even said to yourself when you've gone through tough times and you seem to be still grieving and nobody else kind of really worries about it anymore and you have this heartache, and the colloquial terminology is, well, you just better suck it up. Just better suck it up. We've said that about ourselves, haven't we? You know? And we sometimes can say that about other people. We don't say it to them, but we kind of think, you know, they should be over that by now. The thing is, for many who come to this resolve about themselves in the valley of the shadow of death, that there is no hope, that's all they can do. They just come to that resolve as if, I've just got to suck it up. There's nothing more I can do. This is part and parcel of life. For these people have not heard about a shepherd who cares for them. They have not heard about a shepherd who knows them by name. They have not heard about a shepherd who is willing to walk with them and lead them through this shadow-filled valley. They haven't heard the mighty stories found in God's word, nor have they read the psalms of praise written by warriors of the faith, where they've talked about God's faithfulness, his provision and care as a good shepherd. The glorious thing is that we, his sheep, have entered his fold and we experience all those wonderful things that he wants to bestow upon his sheep. Even if we're wounded, we can be wounded believers. We can testify to the experience of lying down in green pastures, being led by still waters. It's our privilege to be recipients of his grace, where he continually restores our soul and forgives us our sin. We know what it's like, even though wounded, to walk in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. We know what it's like to have purpose beyond the pain when we walk with the shepherd. We receive his comfort. We receive his protection. We have experienced his protection. And then, even with our earthly wounds, we will enter our eternal hope, just as Jesus entered the eternity with his wounds on his hands. We too will enter eternity with our wounds. There he will ultimately lead us to the finest pastures where there will be no more tears, no more suffering, and no more pain. You see, the brokenhearted are important to the Good Shepherd. And because the brokenhearted people are important to the Good Shepherd, they are important to us. Isaiah 61, verse 1, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners." See, we too have been anointed. Psalm 23 says that the Good Shepherd anoints my head with oil. Sheep were often anointed by their shepherd on their foreheads, and the oil was to deter the parasites and creatures from entering into their skin and into their wool, and also to particularly stop parasites from going into their ears and causing infection that would then go into their brains and destroy them. A good shepherd would have anointed their sheep and kept them safe. We are the anointed sheep of the Good Shepherd. And there's something I want to remind us all of this morning, which I believe is really important. There are many believers who have been affected by trauma, pain, and brokenness, and there's some here this morning, or many here this morning. Grief still remains a close companion and will highly likely remain with us in this earthly body until this earthly life is over. Sadly, believers beat themselves around, likening this state as a state of failure. And I hope I make sense with this, because it's been something that's been troubling me when I see people that are going through pain and sorrow and defeat, and they have that heaviness and they have that shadow. And I'm talking about believers here that are doing that and are carrying those things, sometimes feel like they're doing a really lousy job at this faith walk. You know, we have to be very careful that we have to distinguish between things. Grief accompanies us. There's been terrible tragedies in people's lives. I don't think that we'll, you know, sometimes we just never ever get through those grief experiences. But the difference is that we have a shepherd in Psalm 23 who says he walks with us through those things, and he feeds us and he keeps us. I think it's very, very important for us to remember that. Sometimes we can be like that, like I said before, and think, oh God, why aren't I over this? Why is this thing causing me still so much pain? The fact is, it's going to, because it's had a large trauma and effect on your life. And God comes along and he heals it and brings balm, and he anoints you and he supports you. But you may well carry that till you get to heaven's door one day. I can remember we were at Hornsby Corps, and we were the officers there, and there was a couple next door, and the gentleman, he was probably in his 60s, and he was there with his wife, and they had a beautiful swimming pool, and we had four kids, very active kids. And he came and said to us one day, "Do you mind if I built a gate between the fences so your four kids could come and use our pool any time they wanted?" Well, our kids were just so excited. They thought it was fantastic. And so we got to know these people, and the kids could go in and out as they pleased, and they're pretty well-behaved kids. They weren't too naughty, and so they didn't make too much of a noise. And then we were invited over for a meal, and we had a few barbecues with them, and then a conversation came up. And they talked to us about their only son that was born but died at the age of four with cancer. Now, that was like 40 years ago. And as they told us the story, they had tears running down their face. You know, they're going to carry that grief till they meet Jesus one day. And the wonderful thing is that the Lord is our shepherd. And for those believers here that beat themselves up and think, well, I'm just not cutting it, I just should be over this, I just want you to be reassured this morning that God is your shepherd and he will walk with you right through to the end. And it may be that you need to carry that right through to the end. In last week's message, you may recall Jesus admonishing the Pharisees about their belligerent hypocrisy and their ill treatment of the healed man who had been living in a shadow of death himself. After Jesus got stuck into them, he then said, "There are others in my fold that I must go and find." And he was speaking of the Gentiles. The Pharisees couldn't care about them. They only were determined to trip Jesus up, and they wanted him dead. But there's a difference with those Pharisees and us as believers here today. And the difference is that we do care. We do care. I don't see any Pharisees here in this room at all. I see people who care, that belong to a family and care for one another and care for people who come into this place during the week. There's no Pharisees here. And we must care. We must respond to Jesus' plea for others who need to be in the fold of God. When we participate in those conversations I spoke about before with people in our everyday, we must not end the conversation with, "Oh dear, that's part and parcel of life." I want to encourage you in your walk daily to be intentional in your conversations. We will probably only ever get the opportunity to meet people once, you know. And I want to encourage you to step out in faith and say some wonderful things to them about the Lord being your shepherd through difficult situations. That's all we need to do. We just need to talk about Jesus. We need to share the love of Jesus with them. We need to tell them the glorious truth that we have a shepherd, a good shepherd who will lead them too. Through their shadows of death, their pain, their sin, their grief, the incidences of trauma inflicted upon them by others, their wounds that even have been self-inflicted, now living within the valley of the shadow of death, of guilt and shame. And we have many who come through these doors who have self-inflicted pain and self-inflicted sorrow. I loved it when those beautiful kids recited the 23rd Psalm, and the last verse in particular that was reiterated over and over, "And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, forever, forever." We may be reminded today that the privilege of knowing the Good Shepherd and the privilege of having our eternal home is for us. That's good that we've been reminded of that. But it's not all about us. Did you know that? Life's not about us. As believers, Jesus has called us and he said, "I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd." I pray that you'll be encouraged to, reach out to people in their times of need. I like that paraphrase. It was good to read it that way. It just gives a different slant to things sometimes and just really helps us for the message to hit home. Just want to read some of it again. "It may lead through dark valleys, but it will come out the other side. I'm not afraid. You are with me. You're armed and you're ready. Even in the darkest days, I will not be abandoned. You will comfort me." Just in the last few minutes of this second section of the message this morning, I want to talk about the fact that God is armed and ready on our behalf. The original text, of course, is that his rod and staff, they comfort me. So the rod and staff. So I reckon you're all pretty intelligent people, and I wouldn't have to go into it too much, but we'll hear a little bit about the rod and the staff, what they mean, the rod and the staff. David was a shepherd as a youth, and he described his use of the rod, his rod, to King Saul in 1 Samuel 17. He said, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father, and when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him." So this was young David. So I don't think he did that with a staff, do you think? The one with the hook on it? Probably did it with the rod. And when you look at the rod and you look up some of the ancient stories about the rods, they're pretty fierce weapons, they were. Rods were sometimes used for defence or offence, and sometimes simply as a walking stick, but at few times the rod and staff are referred to as the same thing. But really the rod, most ancient writings say that the rod was a very strong piece of a strong tool that they used. And actually sometimes a shepherd could actually throw it and hit a sheep that was wandering with the rod and get clobbered on the head with this rod. So the rod is a very symbolic thing through the Old Testament. In Proverbs 13:24, we know this: "Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him." The verse is, of course, talking about discipline. It's not talking about getting out the rod and belting your child with the rod. It's not saying, I've heard some oldies say, spare the rod and spoil the child. It's not about just belting them with that. It's about the form of discipline, any sort of form of discipline to bring a child into alignment. The rod is actually a symbol and a sign of love. The Lord disciplines the one that he loves, the scripture says, and chastises every son who he receives. And the psalmist declares further, Blessed is the one you discipline, Lord, the one you teach from our law. The Lord disciplines those he loves as a father of the son he delights in. As a child growing up, I remember seeing in people's homes and on bookmarks or literature that beautiful picture of Jesus holding the lamb around his neck, you know that one, and holding the feet. And I used to think of that and go, oh, wow, that's lovely. God, yeah, that's how God treats us. He wants to carry his young ones when we're feeling a bit tired and a bit worn out. He wants to carry us. And that's a lovely metaphor. That's a lovely idea. But I found out a bit later, and someone kind of destroyed that beautiful idea of that picture, but I found out that some shepherds in ancient times used to break the leg of a wandering lamb to teach them a lesson. I know. So I don't know if you've heard that, but these are in some of the ancient writings about that. The shepherd would use his rod to break the leg of a lamb. It'd just be one blow, I reckon, boom, in the side of the leg, and it'd be broken. And then he would bind the lamb's leg up, and the shepherd would carry the lamb on his shoulders. And while the wound healed, the lamb sometimes would try and struggle with that and try to get down and walk, but then he soon learned that he had to remain with the shepherd. And the shepherds say that the lamb quickly realised that the broken leg just wouldn't allow them to flee, and they learned that the shepherd was the one that they need to stay close by with. I don't know what you think about it, but I think it's hard for us to view God as one who disciplines. Would you agree? Can I put my hand up? I find that hard to think that God disciplines. But there are plenty of accounts in the Bible of people who are disciplined and punished because of their waywardness and their turning away from the things of God. And I'll just name a few. There's many more, but some of these are fairly dramatic ones. There was Aaron and Miriam who criticised Moses, and then they came out with leprosy. Do you remember that? Ananias and Sapphira, who stole and hid treasure. What happened to them? They died. There was David and Bathsheba, and God told them that their firstborn son would die because of their waywardness and disobedience. So you read those and you go, wow, God, you're a hard God. And I don't like to think of God like that. We read, the Lord is my shepherd, and we think of him as a very gentle God. But sometimes the rod needs to be used. Sometimes the prodding needs to happen when we're just not doing the things we should be doing. Even today I was thinking, we don't hear stories of how and when God disciplines people. We often hear testimonies of God seeking them and calling them and finding them and people being restored and people repenting. But very rarely do you hear someone get up and say, well, I was really disobedient the other day and God disciplined me and gave me a blow and told me I had to wake up to myself. We don't hear those testimonies too much. I tried to figure out why it was. And I think it's because, and I asked myself the question when I was preparing this, Lord, just help me to recount some of the things that where you've disciplined me. And so I sat there at my desk and I'm thinking about them and I'm like, oh, that's right, you did too. Oh, yeah, that time as well. Oh, goodness, yeah. And then they started to become very real. And there was moments of shame and disappointment that I'd failed him on those things, you know, where he had to pull me into line and discipline me. It's interesting too that the times he's had to prod us with his rod to keep us focused and reprimand us are often around relationships with other people. And I think that's what hurts when we think about them. Often mine were about, Christine, you've got to change your attitude with that person. Bang. Wake up yourself, girl. It's not acceptable. It's not acceptable to think that way. You know, one minute you're saying kind things about this person, but then you're double-minded and you're saying something else about them. It can be about attitude of heart, or it can be where we are deliberately hurting other people. We can deliberately hurt people in the workplace. We can hurt people in the schoolyard, within marriage, within the home, between teenagers and parents, with young adults and parents as well. And often the shepherd's chastisement comes in the relationships that are dearest to us, relationships that we take for granted sometimes. And the shepherd with his rod pokes us and pulls us into line in order to make relationships right, both with others and himself. See, it's all about having a right relationship with him and others. The other times of discipline and correction are to do with habitual sin and continual negligence of our soul in areas that are privy only to him and not others. Often we dodge these sort of tough disciplines as well. A few years ago, I want to show you this lamb. I'm going to put him up. Look at him. Oh, sheep, I mean. Poor thing. I'll tell you about him. His name was Shrek, and he was in New Zealand. And Shrek was a merino sheep who lived in the hills over there. And he became famous because he managed to avoid being captured and shorn for 6 years. Check him out. His wool continued to grow and thicken, and his eyes were eventually hidden behind the thick coat. He really makes you laugh, doesn't he? Shrek dodged the shearing by hiding in caves and running from his master. Do you have the other photos there? We'll have a look at this one. That's when he was being shorn. Look at that. Imagine feeling that. And then the next one looks pretty good. There he is. There's Shrek. I don't think he'd be able to walk properly. Really. Shrek dodged the shearing by hiding in caves and running from his master. Once he was captured and shorn, 60 pounds of wool came from his body. Nearly six times the average amount for any sheep. We are often like Shrek. We're like him, the sheep as well. We hide from God, clinging to the things that need to be shorn from us, and our belligerence has everything to do often with pride. We become weighed down with the burdens God could easily remove from us. All it took was a really good shearer to shear off all that sheep, and he was free of that. When God seeks to shepherd us, oftentimes it's through discipline, but it is always with love. I will never ever forget his loving, urgent declaration about us to the Pharisees so long ago, and we learnt about it last week, where Jesus said, again, I have other sheep too that are not in this sheepfold. I must bring them also. They will listen to my voice, and there will be one flock, with one shepherd. Even today, in many parts of the world, shepherds still carry the rods and they still use the rods. But now, just briefly, I want to talk about the staff. And the staff has significant different meaning as well. The staff is symbolic of God's authority. We see it in the case of Moses and Aaron and the exodus of God's people from captivity. The rod was used as a symbol of God's greatness and sovereignty. In ancient Israel, a staff was given to military leaders as a symbol of leadership and sovereignty as well. So understanding the symbolism that he is sovereign, that he is all-knowing and ruler of mankind, surely then we must find great comfort in that truth, especially as we walk through the dark valleys. We need to gain God's perspective and we need to remember these truths, for they will bring that comfort when we grapple with our faith. No wonder David the psalmist said, "I will not fear. I will not fear." He knew the sovereignty of God. David wrote about it. He would not fear. The Lord defends his sheep with his rod, but he brings back the wandering or straying sheep with the shepherd's staff. The shepherd's staff, the crook, has a curved end that fits the neck of the sheep perfectly, and it's a gradual U shape. It can take a hold of little lambs as well as the grown sheep, and a shepherd does this tenderly with the lambs and the sheep. I'll never ever forget when I was a Sunday school teacher at Earlwood Core in Sydney. I was 16 years of age, and I remembered one of Jesus' little sheep being handled very, very poorly. And I remember being so impassioned. I was so angry. So I was 16, a teacher, and we had the Bexley boys used to come to our core. And they'd all march down and we'd have a big Sunday school. There'd be about 50, 60 kids, you know. And we'd all be lined up like you had a proper meeting. Used to be called the YP service, or there was some YP meeting. And the Bexley boys would all sit in the middle. And now when I think about the terrible things that had happened to children in that time, and then I think about this incident that happened, even makes me angry a little bit now. But I'll never ever forget it. And it was there was a young boy and he was sitting in the middle of the group, just about where Anne is. And one of the other Sunday school teachers, a very mature man, angry man, leaned over. It's like he almost had like a staff, you know. And he leaned over with this little sheep and he grabbed him by the ear really tightly. He was leaning over about five seats and he pulled this kid out of the seat, out of the row in front of all these people, took him, dragged him across the front of everybody, took him outside, and then you could hear him blasting and yelling at this kid. I never ever forget, I was just so angry that a little sheep, a little lamb of God, had been damaged and hurt that way in front of people. That's not what our shepherd's like, you know. He's not a tough God like that at all. He doesn't grab us by the ears and twist them and say, you know, you're just not doing too well, you know. I'm tired of your laziness and I'm tired of your incompetence and I'm tired of you always failing. He's not like that. He's a loving, loving God. God doesn't handle us in his correction that way. He is tender. I have only ever known Jesus to be tender in my correction, in his correction of me. God loves us so much not to leave us to ourselves. He uses his staff to keep us close to him. Jesus is the great shepherd. He uses both the rod when we need it and the staff when he needs to. So remember that this week too. He uses both the rod when we need it. So listen out for those proddings and go, okay, Lord, because I don't want a bigger prod next time, just a little one would be good. Ask the Lord to help us to live obedient to his proddings when he corrects us. And let us remember too that the staff, when he calls us to himself, he does it gently. He pulls us gently to himself to walk with him along this road that we call life.